Goldman once again goes under the microscope.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. To Goldman in a moment. First, the number of people filing for first-time jobless benefits unexpectedly rose to 412,000 last week. That's according to the Labor Department. And it's the first rise in 3 weeks. The four-week average, by the way, was up as well. A new bipartisan Senate report includes fresh evidence of what some of the big banks did as the housing bubble deflated. One of those banks, Goldman Sachs, is being accused of misleading congressional investigators. From New York, here's Marketplace's Elisa Roth.
The committee analyzed almost 6,000 pages of emails and other documents from banks like Washington Mutual, Goldman Sachs, and Deutsche Bank. There may not be evidence of out-and-out fraud, but the report makes it clear the banks were looking to profit from the booming real estate market and then rushing to figure out how to survive its collapse. Goldman Sachs is a centerpiece of the report. Democratic Senator Carl Levin wants the Justice Department to look into whether Goldman misled clients. And he says federal prosecutors should think about bringing perjury charges against Goldman executives for telling Congress the bank didn't bet against the housing market and against its own clients to make money.
Why would Goldman deny what is so obvious? Because they gained at the expense of their clients, and they used abusive practices to do it.
Wall Street reforms already address some of the problems identified in the report. But the Senate panel also suggests regulators should look for legal violations in mortgage-related securities, and we should consider how risky lending practices could affect the financial system as a whole. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
A group of leading world economies say they're open to reevaluating whether the U.S. dollar should be the world's main reserve currency. Leaders from the five so-called BRICS countries, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and new member South Africa, just wrapped up their one-day summit in southern China. And the BBC's Juliana Liu is close by in Hainan with more for us right now. Hello, Juliana.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. The BRICS want to move away from the U.S. dollar. Why?
If you think about it from their point of view, say you're Brazil and you want to trade with China and you want to sell widgets to China, why should you not settle that trade in your own currency if you can? Why allow yourself to be held hostage to the rate that the dollar is trading against your own currency? So from their point of view, they simply want to minimize risk. And if they are big enough so that their currency can be accepted as a way of settling world trade, why not?
The U.S. and China, Juliana, have been duking it out over the currency issue for a long time now. Is this just China's way of sort of using its power to gain allies in that fight?
I think China is generally using its power to gain allies. Here in China, it's almost accepted that within 10 years or so, the Chinese currency will become freely tradable. It just wants to do it at its own timetable, not subject to pressure from outside. I think what you're seeing now with the BRICS is something far more fundamental. These countries, their economies make up 20% of economic activity around the world. They want their voices to be louder in the international monetary system.
Juliana Liu in Hainan, China. Juliana, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Global markets are lower at the moment, an average of 1%. The government said today wholesale prices rose slightly in March, mainly due to gasoline costs. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow tacked on 7 points to close at 12,270.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, managing over $1.7 trillion in assets, providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Manta.com, providing an online destination for small businesses to be found and to find new customers. More online at Manta.com. Marketplace Innovations Desk is supported by Jaguar. You can experience the 2011 Jaguar XJ at a local dealer or visit jaguarusa.com.
In Cuba this weekend, the Communist Party Congress is going to mark 50 years since the failed U.S.-led Bay of Pigs invasion. And at the annual summit, Cuba's socialist leaders will ask the assembly to sign off on some free market economic reforms. From Havana, reporter Grant Fuller filed this report on how that's affecting Cuban entrepreneurs.
In Baracoa, the oldest town in Cuba, it's festival time. There's reggaeton music and, as usual, state-run fried chicken stands. But also, young men run private roulette tables, women sell cookies and bubblegum, and a man carries around a rack of hats for sale. This is Cuban-style free enterprise at work. Last October, President Raúl Castro promised to slash 500,000 jobs from Cuba's inflated government payroll. To cushion the blow of those job cuts, he announced a new venture into the private sector. More than 170,000 Cubans now have self-employment licenses for everything from carpentry to childcare.
This is the best thing the Cuban government has done to help us.
Lázaro Delgado got one of the new permits to sell flowers on the street in Havana.
They're giving everyone the chance to work, helping us all start doing something. We can do anything we want as long as we keep our part of the bargain. The state is giving us a chance to make it.
But don't forget, it's still communist Cuba, and taxes are sky high. Small business owners give back up to 40% of their annual income, and they pay a high monthly fee on top of that. There's also a lack of startup capital. Government banks announced a plan to provide limited credit for the self-employed, but that program has yet to get rolling. I'm talking to a woman who works at a Havana office that issues the new licenses. She refuses to give her name for fear of losing her job. She says many Cubans have become so fed up with the slow pace of change that they've returned to her office to give their licenses back.
They thought having their own business would make things better, but they can't come out on top because the taxes are so high. So people are giving up their licenses more than the government expected.
The new business owners hope this weekend's Communist Party Congress will be a chance to further tweak the system in their favor. In Havana, I'm Grant Fuller for Marketplace.
And finally, Virgin Airlines owner Richard Branson will honor the bet he made with AirAsia CEO Tony Fernandez. The two wagered last year on whose race team would finish higher in the 2010 Bahrain Formula One Grand Prix. Branson lost the bet. So on May 1st, aboard AirAsia's 13-hour London to Kuala Lumpur route, the billionaire Branson will be your flight attendant, complete with shaved legs, high heels, and a bright red dress. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The collective hope in Japan is that destruction could lead to rebirth in every possible way.
Change, chaos, crisis often precedes huge leaps of entrepreneurship and innovation.
I'm Tess Vigeland, rebuilding and rethinking recovery, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.